Nation, welcome back to another episode of Operation Self Reset. I am Jacob Naraki. Like always, thank you for listening. Truly, I really do appreciate it. And if you are a long-term, hardcore listener of Operation Self Reset, I appreciate you for sticking around because I understand that this new schedule I have in place, we'll call it, every other week is kind of lengthy. And I know some of you are kind of disappointed in the long turnaround with some of these podcasts, but it has allowed me to focus my effort and energy onto different projects that I have been putting on the back burner. Since about February of this year, I've been doing two podcasts a week, and my life was basically working, taking care of the family, and then podcasting, and everything else that I thought of, it just kind of went to the wayside. So I appreciate you for sticking around. And if you're a new listener to the show, thank you very much for sticking around and or listening for your first time, and I hope you truly get some takeaways. With that being said, today we're going to be talking about public speaking, but not about me. It's never about me. Come on, let's be serious here. It's all about you doing a little reset, a reset revolution in your own personal life. We all have greatness within. It's a matter of resetting our ideas and thinking and the way we look at ourselves to become our personal best. And that's why I bring really cool, creative people on this podcast to help you and I look at life a little different to help us through the reset process. So today, we have on Scott Lesnick. Him and I connected at NSA, which is National Speakers Association. And I do speak of this in the podcast episode, but I want to make it clear that if you want to do something, and I'm not saying you need to quit your job. It could be an athletics, you know, thing, a hobby. It could be cooking, becoming a better teacher. If you want to, you know, start writing poems, being good at presentation skills. If you want to work on small engine repair, be a professional Lego builder. I don't know. I'm just giving examples here. Find an organization or a group of people that is already doing that and insert yourself into that group. That's truly the best way to get yourself to that next level. These people that are in these communities and organizations enjoy what they're doing. And if you enjoy what they're doing, they're going to bring you in with open arms. And that's what happened with Scott and I connected. He actually lives in Wisconsin here. So it was the easy thing for him and I to talk about and relate upon about all of our winter shoveling and how winter is almost here. Let's not talk about that. But I just wanted to say, if you're looking to enhance yourself for work or your hobby or to specialize in something, look online to see if there's either a national association of some type or a meetup. Go to meetup.com, go on Facebook, Facebook, you know, page or organization. And it doesn't matter if they're local or around the world, there's always ways to connect with people and jump in the message board, jump, you know, in front of their face and wave your arms and say, hey, I love what you guys are doing. I want to be a part of it. And they'll bring you in with open arms. But enough of that. Let's dive into the conversation with Scott. It's really an interesting reset that he has done on his own personal life. And also the story that he shares in this podcast is very personal, very deep. And I hope you guys enjoy it. I think you're going to learn a lot. And Scott has a lot of great insight on the way that he now lives his life and the progression of where his life is continuing to go. So with that being said, like always, guys, thank you so much for listening. And here is the podcast episode. Hey, guys, welcome back to the podcast. Today we have on an awesome gentleman, a local person I met recently within about July. His name is Scott Lesnick. And we connected. He is a professional speaker, but his career has gone through a true reset. Scott, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure, Jake. I'm glad to be with you. It was nice spending some time with you last week, too, at the NSA video presentation day. That was very cool.
Yeah, it was awesome. And for the people that are listening, NSA is the National Speakers Association. And if you are interested in becoming a speaker, learning how to cook, or just doing something you personally love, I'd suggest finding a local group within your area. There's chapters and different groups all over the U.S. And whatever you're into, go and reach out, because that's, if you want to do that, you got to hang out with the right people. And that's why I started hanging out with Scott, and truly he's an awesome guy. And it was great to see you perform. I've seen you a couple of times on the internet and little clips here and there, but to see you truly in your true form, keep saying truly, it was really impressive. You know, you are a professional speaker now, and but it didn't start that way. If you wouldn't mind taken us through the journey. How did you get to where you are today?
I have no idea. No, what happened is I after college, I graduated and I went to New York for a little while and worked for Calvin Klein. That didn't work out. And I ended up getting another job and moved back home to Milwaukee and worked in the corporate world for a big Berkshire Hathaway company for many years. And that worked out very, very well. But I found out after my kids got a little older, it wasn't where I wanted to be anymore. And there was something else I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to write, and I knew I wanted to speak, but I didn't know which was going to happen first. So I began writing a book. And after what I did is I really kept my day job, which you're supposed to do, right, in the corporate world. And I also began working on writing and becoming a professional speaker, which meant doing a lot of non-paid presentations and getting stage time to polish my craft and get the ums, ands, ers, buts, and sos out of there.
Right. And if you wouldn't mind taking us through that time when you discovered that working for the corporation was not your passion. When did this arise to you? Was it always something you wanted? You always wanted to be a writer when you were a little kid, and you're just like, no, today I'm going to start.
No, I always wanted to be a fireman, but I didn't have the guts.
I know. Not everybody can be a fireman.
Yeah, but what I wanted to do was be an attorney, and that's how I was raised. Was you're going to be a lawyer? And senior year of college, I decided I didn't want to do that. And when I got into the corporate world, it was great, and I learned a lot, met a lot of people, I made a difference, and I also got knocked down a few times, which is life. But what I found out is that I had accomplished what I wanted to do, and I was still there. Okay. And then I began to ask myself, okay, well, you're not as young as you used to be. You've been at this particular company for over two decades. What are you going to do? Right. So the self-reset for me was looking myself really in the mirror one day. I was brushing my teeth, and I just remember looking and going, what are you going to do? I thought, well, I'm going to try to write a book. And I thought, I don't know how to write. And apparently I was wrong. I some people say I do. So I wrote my book, and in between all that, I was still working. But I knew 5 years before I left the company that I was going to leave the company. And that's really when my reset began, because I told myself, that's it. You're going to write. Then I spoke to somebody about it, and she goes, writing? Great. How are you going to sell your book, and do you know how to speak? And her name is Eliz. And once Eliz and I got together, that reset my path again. And I went from the professional corporate world to writing to learning how to become a professional speaker within a five-year period, little by little. So I did both for 5 years.
If you wouldn't mind walking us through, that story is unbelievable. To find, it's kind of funny because you and I have talked off mic, and we're kind of, I'm starting out, and you're obviously in the realm of professional speaking and doing what you personally love right now, and I'm just beginning. And it's really cool to kind of hear you say, I was satisfied. Like, you felt like you kind of, you hit all the things that you wanted to do in your life, and you're like, all right, now it's time to move on. You know, it's time to carry on. And I kind of feel that too. And it's really interesting to hear your perspective, and it's just rewarding to know that what I'm feeling is not weird or crazy or anything like that. It's just a part of life for some individuals. But a lot of times when I interview people on this podcast, they go through a struggle period. They when they want to transform, when they want to do that reset, they're scared. They don't know how others are going to react. If you wouldn't mind taking us through, how did your support group, you know, your coworkers, your family, how did they react to you following something that you were personally passionate about?
Excellent question. Jake, you hit the nail on the head. The word is fear.
Right.
And fear rules our lives if we allow it to. And it can also be a friend and almost a bit of an ally if you can keep it at bay and have some sort of agreement with yourself on how much fear is going to be present in your life. A lot of us couldn't do what we do. You couldn't do what you did if you were paralyzed with fear. So what I did is I decided that it was okay with me. Once I decided it was all right with me and I was going to do this, that began the process. Then I spoke to my wife, who is smarter than me, and gave me the thumbs up too. She said, yes, this is what you should be doing. Now, then there's everyone else. So right. If you have a significant other in your life and they're on your side, that is 90% of it. Right. So you've come so far, you've decided, I'm going to reset. I'm going to move in a different direction. I'm moving forward, but it's my life, and this is what I choose to do. Why is it any different if you eat pizza than what you put on your pizza? If one person likes cheese and sausage and another one wants pepperoni or another one wants vegetables, that's their decision. And if somebody wants to reset their life and move in another direction, I encourage it. So what I did with the supporting cast in my life is it was great. I spoke little, listened a lot, and watched their expressions. And when I would tell people that the job I had that I was fortunate enough to be able to leave, and the company was very gracious about giving me a year before I left to really get my act together even more. The company, it was a six-figure income. So, and the reason I'm saying that is when I would tell people that I was going to speak full time and get paid and write books, people who really knew me said, look, a lot of times when you say you're going to do things, it sounds a little strange, or some people might go, oh, wow, I can't believe you're going to do that. But we know it's you and you usually pull through. So no problem. But there were also enough people who looked at me. I guess the best way to describe it is if you were to go and tell people you care about one day, you know, I've become an IV drug user. I really dig it. And meth and heroin are my favorite things to do now. That face that you would get from people, that look and that stare, that's what I got from a bunch of people. They couldn't understand. And I realized early on that it was their fear. There's no way they would do that. And maybe they would. There's no way they could really comprehend what I was doing, and that's okay, because I already was cool with it. And once I was okay, you could pretty much say what you wanted. I was going to do it anyway.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and it's funny that face that you're just explaining, you do a great job of breaking it down and having it relate to everybody. You do a nice job of that. I got to get better at using your examples. But I was just going to say, you know, a lot of times when you do present to people that you are going to, you know, quit a six-figure job, you know, it's almost putting a lot of pressure on them too to question, whoa, you know, should I be doing something different? And I personally found out that, you know, I've been a little more vocal of my position in life and where I want to head. And I can see a lot of my friends that are exact same age in the exact same situation. Mm-hmm. It feels like I'm almost questioning them, you know, for not thinking like me or wanting more out of life. And it's uneasy for some people.
Right. I see what you're saying. It makes them uncomfortable, but that's them. It's not you.
Yeah, exactly. But if you know what your path is, it's time to move forward. So, yeah, thanks for taking us through that. I just always find it interesting. You know, it's funny. Everybody goes through the same thing, but it's always a little different or whatever. And I'm glad to hear that people were supportive, but the people that are not are continuing to do what they love, and you're doing what you love. So that's all that matters.
And I don't judge them for it. My only advice, and it has to do with life a lot, is try to control fear. And people will go, well, no, you can't. Well, yes, you can. And I even talk about that in one of my presentations too. There's definitely a way of doing that. And if you don't, it can hold you back, paralyze you, keep you stagnant, whatever you want to call it. And sometimes that's not where you want to be.
Sure. Have you ever had fear of success?
Wow. That is a good question. No. I've had fear of not accomplishing what I wanted to accomplish, not fear of failure as much as how disappointed and bummed out I'd be if I didn't get from point A to point B being light years away, but knowing that if I move forward, I get closer and closer. So a fear of success? No, because answer your question.
All right, cool. Now you quit, you go down this new path, you're enjoying it. If you wouldn't mind, do you have any funny stories of the first time you spoke live in front of an audience? You know, were there any moments when you questioned, like, did I make the right decision? You know, am I really going to make a go of this? Or were you so determined, you really felt it in every bone in your body that you're just destined for this? And you I don't want to say you knocked it out of the park, but it was a growing process, of course. But do you have anything that to share that was pretty memorable?
First time I spoke, I knew I was going to hit it out of the park. Oh. I knew I was well prepared. So I went in feeling great, ready to deliver. And as they read my presentation and the person who was reading it was struggling with things like my name, Scott Lesnick, getting the University of Miami incorrect and calling it Maine and other things. And then I'm sitting there and just little things, and it knocked me off my game for a moment. But I thought, hey, I can do this. I've spoken and I've presented for my company so many times, no big deal. Well, I went up and I began my speech and I started it off strong and I began to sweat. And I began to sweat under my armpits so badly that it was like one of those commercials where you wish you had some 24-hour deodorant on, because I thankfully had a sport coat on, but I had a feeling that it was going to literally start dripping down my arm and out my arms, because for some reason I was having this nervous issue. And it took me a while actually to get over that. So the first time I spoke, my introduction wasn't done very well. My presentation was okay. They liked it. I didn't. And my ability to control my sweating from underneath my armpits was not good.
Yeah, yeah. I can imagine, though, you know, I'm laughing because I could see that for myself. You know, you're talking, you're presenting, and then you're analyzing your sweat and
yes,
how it's dripping down your arm, and you're feeling uncomfortable, and you're wondering, do they see that you're uncomfortable? And yeah, I hear you.
It wasn't a great place to be, but I chalked it up to nerves and you know, some sort of apprehension or whatever. And then I worked on it, and I also made sure that any time after that I gave an introduction to somebody, I asked them to go over it with me. Do you have any questions? So I've had no problems after that.
Oh, smart, smart. Well, like anything, you grow with it and analyze it. Obviously, now that you're speaking a lot, what do you do to get yourself in the zone? We were talking earlier, you said you visualize the audience, and I'm a big mindset believer, and I love concepts like that to prepare yourself. You know, visualize weeks in advance of anything that you're going to do, so when you are up there on stage, you're expecting everything, the feel of the lights, the movement of the air around you, the crowd either looking at you or being distracted. Do you mind walking us through that process, what you do personally to get prepared?
Is this a paid gig or a free gig?
Ooh, let's go paid, because actually, then that's big time, right?
Actually, that was a trick question, because I do the same for both.
Oh, okay. All right.
And the paid ones are few and far between, but I do give back because it's part of what I believe in. But what I do is I plan months in advance. There's somebody I'm speaking to in Indiana in September, and I just spoke with Carol on the phone this morning. And we talked about a few more things that I wanted to make sure I understood, and I wanted to make sure I was going to deliver their keynote, their opening keynote for the conference, properly. Once we were confident with that, I began crafting my presentation. So I'm a month away now from presenting to them and many other presentations, and that's when I really begin. About 30 days before, if it's a keynote that I'm used to giving and I have to customize it, it's less of a deal. And that's what this one is. So I'm going to customize it. I'm going to make it about them. But what I do is I begin to research them, because this particular group, I don't know that much about them, but they wanted me. So it's my job to know about them. It's my job on my questionnaire to ask all sorts of questions so I meet and exceed their expectations and there's no surprises. It's my job to be prepared to be out in front when my name is called. they don't know what goes on behind the scenes, just like nobody knows what people do, you know, for their jobs. You know, you do
right.
it.
Right.
And then I get wherever it is, I arrive a day early if it's out of town. There's no problems with flights. If there are, not a big issue because I left at least 24 hours before.
Sure.
And as far as visualizing, I know who I'm speaking to because I ask them questions like, how many people will be attending? What are the demographics, female to male ratio? What is the age range? Typical titles of people that are going to be there. So I already know who these dudes and dudettes are that are out in the audience. I just don't know what they look like, but they're going to probably look like a regular bunch of people from their 20s to 70s, because that's what this particular group is. So the nice thing is I'm talking on generations. And so I'll have Gen X, Gen Y, boomers, and the traditionalist World War II people. And so I begin to visualize that, and I make my presentation about them, and I take the key points that they want to make sure are in there, and I insert them where the right spots are because I've built it that way. And then I'm like a kid. The day before, I've checked out my room where I'm going to be presenting. If there's AV people, I've spoken with them. I've done a sound check. If it's a smaller room, I'm checking things out myself. I make sure that the seating is right. I make sure that the exits are clear. I make sure that the seating is comfortable for everybody there and they can see screens if I'm presenting, sure. Stage, that there's nobody who's left out. That's my job as a speaker. And the next morning, I'm already there, ready to go when they're doing whatever. And it just depends. This particular one, I'm on at 8:30 in the morning. So my challenge, and I was talking to Carol this morning, I said, do you know what my challenge is going to be? She goes, yeah, really wowing us. I said, no. I said, I'm going to do that. I said, I just know I'm going to do that. I'm going to do my absolute best. I said, my challenge is it starts at 8:30 in the morning and I've got an hour and a half to speak. And the night before, because the conference will have been on for one day and I'm opening it up for the general session and the keynote, I said, people are going to be out partying. Yeah. People are going to be out having fun. And I'm going to have to wake them up at 8:30 in the morning and get them energized and alive. I said, that's a challenge. And she goes, she's from Tennessee. She goes, so Scott, what are you going to do? And I said, I have no clue. She goes, well, you've got about 30 days to decide. I said, I know. That's one of the reasons we called. Yeah. So again, I have no idea right now on this phone call what I'm going to do, but I know by the time I'm there, I'm going to wake them up. I said, Carol, I'm going to gently hit them right between the eyes. They'll have no choice but to be awake once I get on stage. Awesome. She goes, that's what I'm talking about. So yeah. That's a little bit of what I go through.
Yeah, that's cool. And that's cool that you have such a positive attitude about it. You know it will come. You know, you're not like, oh my gosh, I got 30 days left. You're not the worry wart. You're more the proactive. It's going to come and I'm going to wow them. And you're just so determined and so passionate that you know you're going to be making a difference in these people's lives to really wake them up. And it's really cool to hear that. You know, you're really jacking yourself up and you believe in yourself enough to feel comfortable in these, I don't want to say awkward situations, but these unique situations of waking these people up. So
I get a lot back from them too, Jake. You know, I educate, I train, I give them things to think about and takeaways, but I get so much back when I spend time with them after, or I spend time before. Sometimes I'll be talking in a group and I'll be hanging out and just talking with them and learning and finding out things and learning about life from them. And all of a sudden, the next day or later that day, they see me take the stage and they have no idea that they were talking about to the guy who's going to do that. Cause I want to learn from them. So yeah, I teach, I learn too. It's a two-way street.
Yeah, that's for sure. Let's take it back to, before we dive into your kind of signature speech and your book, Kid Jacked, which is just unbelievable. I want to give some information for the listener. What have you learned throughout your speaking career from where you were back in the corporate world, probably doing a great job at presentations, to where you are now that you wish you would have told your old self in that corporation? What can you suggest or tell somebody in a couple of tips or steps to improve their presentational skills in their own corporation or somebody that's seeking to improve upon their just speaking ability overall?
Darren LaCroix from Toastmasters, who won the international speech contest many years ago, said it best. He said, stage time, stage time, stage time. Yeah. And what that means to me is two things. Practice, practice, practice. And I could say that word 1,000 more times. And then get out and deliver it for free anywhere you can to a group of one, a group of five, a group of 15, a group of 25, and begin getting used to it. You know, that old adage that the only thing that people are more afraid of than death is public speaking. That holds true for some people. But what I wish I would have known is to start earlier. You, I envy because you're starting earlier. I started 5 years ago, and that's older than you are, and that's cool. But the other thing is that a group like Toastmasters does wonderful things for speaking. If you want to be a better speaker when you present at work, because that's part of your job and you're not comfortable, Toastmasters will hug you, make you better, help you say things better, and move you along. Toastmasters is great for that. And as a professional, you can join a Toastmasters chapter and go over some of your new material and find the right people, somebody who's really good to evaluate you there. And then when you take Toastmasters and you combine that with the National Speakers Association, which is all about the professional business of public speaking, from your website to how to become a speaker, what to do in different situations, how to deal with meeting planners, you put those two together, and it's a great, great template for success.
Cool. Yeah. Obviously we spoke and I'm part of Toastmasters, and it really is. I mean, they embrace you, and it doesn't matter how horrible you are or even how good you are. There's always room for improvement. And the great thing about Toastmasters too, is that you're really competing against yourself. You know, when you get up there and present, you might have been the best speech for that day, you know. But it doesn't matter, because you are trying to improve yourself and get yourself to the next level. So it doesn't matter. It's not a competition. You're not there to beat somebody else. You're literally there to just improve upon where you were before, to the steps that you need, or you know, to get rid of the ums and the stuttering, whatever, to really improve upon yourself. And I think that's really powerful in itself, because we're so used to competition. And there are competitions in Toastmasters, but that's not what it's built upon. It's built upon just improving your overall ability to present.
I agree. And if you want to take it a step further, Toastmasters does have competition. You can't,
yes, they do.
You can compete, but at the local level, it's all about helping you get better, more confident, and polishing your speech or your craft. Absolutely.
No, for sure. So let's dive into your book, Kid Jacked. And I was fortunate enough to see you present this live, and I know it was a very short version, and it's a remarkable story, first off. I mean, if you weren't a speaker and you and I met in a bar and you told me about this story, it would be unbelievable to the normal person. But because you are, you know, presenting and you're bringing in a lot of life lessons that you personally learned throughout the story, it's unbelievable. So for the person that doesn't have any idea about Kid Jacked, if you wouldn't mind giving us a background, a Cliff Note version, whatever you feel is appropriate to fill them in.
Absolutely. Kid Jacked is a book I wrote, the first book. Second book's coming out later this year. And Kid Jacked is the true story of how I came up with a way to locate and rescue my two small children when they were kidnapped and taken to the Middle East. There you have it. and the book is basically about a guy, me, and what a person and a father is willing to do when given the ultimatum on the phone by his ex-wife. By his wife. We're not coming back. Go on with your life. Go find somebody else. So the story is basically, what does a guy do to try to figure out how to get his children back when there's no international laws requiring them to be returned?
Right. Yeah, I want to ask you first off, how long ago did this happen now?
Early 90s.
Okay, and you were married to your wife for how long?
5 years.
5 years. Okay.
And 5 years in total. So really it was 4 years back then. Yeah.
Okay. 4 years. And what was her main objective? Why did she take the kids unexpectedly and move them and herself back to the Middle East?
She had thought that she wanted to live here. She knew that she wanted to live here, and she had assured me that this is where she wanted to be. But after being here for a few years, she had such a pull with her country and a pull with her family that she couldn't find happiness here. But what I found out later on, and through no means of my own, but through psychological testing, she had some pretty deep-seated issues going on. And those deep-seated issues are something I just didn't know and I didn't notice. I don't think I could have. So it wasn't really a normal situation. It was somebody who had some pretty big issues and was right in every situation no matter what, including taking and withholding two little children from their father.
Oh, that's for sure. And how long was the gap from when you woke up that morning, they were gone, to your first time talking to your children?
First time talking to my children.
Talking
to my children was about 4.5 months, Jake.
Wow. That's unbelievable. I mean, I have a 15-month-old, child, and
yes.
I can only imagine that being stripped of you. Do you mind going into detail? I mean, what were you thinking? Like, how were you angry? Were you mad? Were you trying to, stay clear of your mindset and, try to work this problem out? Or were you just a hot mess?
I was all those and more. If you can imagine somebody having a gun to your head, which I can't because it's never happened, but the thoughts, emotions, the fear, the anger, the helplessness, all of those wrapped up into one were what I felt pretty much most moments of every day. And my challenge was to keep myself together or curl up into a ball and die. And curling up into a ball and dying was an option. But once I realized that my responsibility was to keep my act together, I tried very, very hard to do that and was successful at doing it. But it's not easy.
Right. Right. What did you learn about yourself throughout this process?
I learned that I am, as my title on my website says, I am the never give up guy. I went through so much to try to get these kids back without the Hague Convention for International Child Abduction being signed, and that treaty not being signed really made it difficult. And I learned that I'm a fighter. And I never realized that because I just kind of considered myself a mellow guy.
Sure.
But I realized when pushed, I would do whatever it took and not hope for the best, but try to make the best happen, not knowing at any point, knowing that there was no guarantee at any time.
Yeah. And what was the time range from them leaving to you seeing them in person for the first time?
5 months.
5 months. Okay. And then you stayed there for how long?
I stayed for a little less than a week. I had devised a plan to try to – the only way that I could get my children back was to have them walk on a plane. I couldn't bring them back. I couldn't hire mercenaries. There was all these things that people all over the country and I spoke about. But, once attorneys told me there was nothing I could do and the State Department couldn't help and my local and federal and no one could, I realized it was on me. So that's when I hatched this plan to convince my wife that we were going to move to Israel and give her what she wanted. Because she wasn't mad at me. I had done nothing wrong and she told me that. So I knew I had this little in.
Okay.
And she didn't know about the Hague Convention not being signed. So I went there and I worked on things for a week while I was there, surrounded by several of her brothers who are police officers.
Oh, boy.
Her father, who's the size of a small bear. And I was scared every second. And in the book, I get into detail, and there's moments where I was pretty sure I was toast, and there was moments I was pretty sure somebody knew what was going on and I was going to be outed and game over.
Wow.
And done, never see my kids again. So not until I was able to get them on that plane and the plane took off and then 13 hours later landed in Chicago, not till then did I feel comfortable. And then, even then, that's when the story begins. When my children and I and Lisa, my wife, land in Chicago after them being kidjacked 5 months, that's when the story begins. You would think, well, man, wow.
Right, easy peasy, you're done, right, yeah.
No, actually, that's when the story ends, and that's why when people are reading the book, they'll look and they'll go, wait a minute. It looks like this thing's coming to an end, but I've got all these pages left. And this is a memoir. What's going on? And it's something that I don't even do in my keynote because it's only an hour long and I want people to really enjoy the book. So I you know, can't do a whole book in an hour and do it justice, just like you can't do a book into a movie and do every little bit
detail.
Of dialogue.
Right, right. Were you, after you brought him back, and I know you filed divorce papers on your wife, your now ex-wife, and were you afraid of her family coming to America? You know what I mean? And doing something to you? I mean, yep. you were okay.
All absolutely, right. Totally, every night, freaking out. Oh, however, man, there's one thing I had going for myself besides the children being home in America, and that's that the second we landed, I made sure that the passports of my children were not in their mother's possession anymore. Oh. And the moment we got to our house, I called a friend. My friend came and picked them up and secured them.
Awesome.
So I felt better there. But yes, I did worry about her family coming. There were no guarantees. There were never any guarantees. You know, you're pretty sure when you're eating your favorite food that it's going to taste good. That's right. Kind of almost a given. Almost a guarantee. Well, this was the opposite. Anything and everything could fall apart and blow up instantly all the time. And I knew that.
Yeah. Any repercussions, anything happen after everything was kind of finished and she moved on with her life and your kids stayed here? Does she still come back to visit or anything like that? Or do they go out there?
She doesn't come back much. She did decide to move back here for a few years. And then she left again once she realized that I was going to have custody. But for me, the challenge was the children. It was always about the children.
Right, right.
And even when I wrote the book, our kids were like, so this book's about us? And I said, not really. You're in it. Oh, you're in it. I said, but really, it's just about one guy who didn't know what the hell he was doing.
Right.
And was scrambling every second. And putting little pieces together and feeling like it was falling apart, but constantly moving forward, hoping one day the clouds would move away and the sun would shine. And that's what happened. But my challenge always was raising the children in a positive environment, raising them in a healthy environment. And the problem was their mother, she was pretty hard on them mentally. And would say a lot to them, as some parents will do, would talk very negatively about me. And there was a lady who advised me very early on, and she was right, that whatever you do when you're going through something with your children, or if you're going through a divorce with your spouse or a relationship that's ending and there's children involved, you never, ever, ever say anything negative about the other person.
Sure.
Because it messes them up. So today, my children are grown. And they can say whatever they want, and we have a very close relationship. But what they can't say is, Dad, boy, did you bash Mom. Boy, did you say a lot of mean things. Yeah. Did they know I didn't care for their mother? Absolutely. Do they have any memory of me saying things and making them feel bad about her? No, they couldn't, because I didn't.
Good. Good. Yeah, that's a great tip for any parent out there. And you know, I personally know a couple of people that are going through divorce and have gone through divorce. And that's mm-hmm. one thing, is that they try to play it fair for each other because it is tough, you know. And granted, your situation is even that much bigger, you know, and you still played it cool and you still did the right thing. And congratulations to you, because that must have been tough.
It was real tough, but it's what you have to do as a parent. But yeah, no, it isn't. It's tough. Even if you're getting along, it's tougher when you're having all these arrows and bullets and rocks shot at you, not literally, but figuratively, and you're trying to dodge them and block them all the time, but you can't say anything back. You really want to. You want to turn into a 10-year-old and go, oh, yeah?
Right. Back at you. Right.
You can't.
Right. Yeah, that's an impressive story. I suggest anybody that's listening, if they enjoy that or if they're in a similar situation, get his book, Hijacked. Since then, have there been new rules or laws or regulations passed about taking kids out of the country without having both adults or both parents?
The U.S. signed the Hague Convention on International Aspects of Child Abduction many, many years ago, back in the 80s. Okay. Many countries have also signed, so we have reciprocal agreements with them. They were taken to Israel, and at the time, Israel hadn't signed. They have since signed.
Oh, they have, okay.
And I'm proud. I was shocked, but I'm also proud to be able to say now, here we are in August of 2014, that just recently, this year, Japan signed the Hague Convention. Oh. Before that, they weren't even on there. And this is a country that's one of the major powers financially in the world. They are now signed too. So if you're ever going to marry somebody from another country, make sure they've signed it. And you know, if you're interested in the book, www.scottlesnick.com.
Yeah, for sure. I'll put that in the show notes too and pump it as much as I can for you. Because I'm telling you, that is impressive. That is an amazing story. And you, like you said, you know, you seem like an easygoing, cool guy, laid back. But you know, when you start messing with somebody's family, you will do whatever it takes. And one important, you know, impressive part of your presentation was that you asked, like, you know, can you want to come with me? I think you asked your lawyer that or something. You wanted support, and they're like, no, that you got to do this on your own, or you know, I'm not coming. And literally, was all on your shoulders. I tip my hat to you. That's really, really impressive.
Yeah, I look back now and I'm like, yeah, cool move. But I realized I was sweating bullets every second. I was scared stiff and out of my element. But I was like, well, you really don't have much of a choice.
Scott, to finish up here, last couple questions, because I know your time is precious. Let's bring it back to the person that's listening to this. This podcast is all about self-reset, personal development, trying to improve upon themselves. What have you learned? What are the things that you wish you could share, or you tell your kids, or you tell others that are in the same situation as you, as you know, they live a corporate job, they want to do something different, and it doesn't have to be anything entrepreneur, become a speaker, but maybe just do something that they personally enjoy, they want to explore. Do you have any, you know, tips or ideas to help them along their process?
I would offer this. In my life, I have found out many times, and we know this, but it bears repeating, and it's my tagline, that persistence equals success. And that's how we get where we are in life. If there's a reset, a self-reset that you want to make in your life, first of all, you know, you do visualize it. This is what I want. Then you ask yourself, how am I going to get there? And there's so many people you can talk to today. You can Google it. There's so much information out there. But my best advice is to remember that you have to be persistent in order to get there. And the other advice I would give is, if you're going to reset and you're going to go from corporate to this or do something in your life, even if it's, hey, I've been with this person for 10 years and it is not right anymore. That's a major reset.
Yeah.
My advice is, no matter what the situation is talk to others. The more you talk, the more information you get. You keep what you want, you spit out what you don't and toss it aside, and it helps quite a bit. So opening up to others is huge. It gives you a lot of options and opens up your eyes to things you may not have thought of otherwise.
Now, those are really good, simple, precise tips. And one thing I always say, the simpler, the better, because then you can truly implement them into your own life. And those are great ideas and concepts.
Agreed.
And the last question I always end the podcast with, or at least I usually end it with, because sometimes I forget and, you know, and then I go, oh, shoot, I forgot about that last question. And you've already answered it numerous times throughout this podcast. But what does a self-reset mean to you?
Can I get back to you on that?
Yeah, sure. No. We'll just go to a commercial.
A self-reset to me means being true to you. If you want to go somewhere, don't worry about what others are thinking. Listen to what they're saying if you want, but be true to yourself, because it's your life. Like I said, nobody should tell you what to order on your pizza. No one should tell you what to do with your life. It's your choice.
Wow. Nice job. You're good. You're good, Scott. I appreciate you so much for coming on here. I know the listeners are just going to really eat up their own pizza on this one. And again, they can go to your website. And also, I believe you're on Amazon too, your book.
Yeah, book is on Amazon. Book is on the website. And a lot of people do it that way because they want me to put a little note in there or whatever. Ebook is on the website too. And Jake, I appreciate it. It's wonderful. You're a great kid, and you're a great young man. And I'm learning from you, and I'm looking forward to growing our relationship too, and spending a little bit more time having some coffee and shooting the breeze.
Oh, that's for sure. Yeah, we're obviously going to stay in touch. So appreciate it, Scott. Thank you so much, and hopefully we'll have you on again here.
Sounds great, Jake. Thanks for everything.
Thanks again to Scott for coming on the Operation Self Reset podcast. I think we all can agree. Crazy story, wild story. Luckily, everything turned out in a happy manner, and everything's okay. And it's almost too crazy of a story to even believe. But like Scott has on his website, he truly is the never give up guy. And no matter the circumstances, no matter what happens in your own personal life, I think the one thing that we can agree upon. If you are ever put in a situation like that where you're tested, you will step up to plate. You will step in the batter's box and you will start swinging away and you will do whatever it takes. It's our human nature. And Scott, you know, never expected to be put in this situation, but he did whatever it took. And I think everybody that's listening to this, if you are put in somewhat of the same situation or a crazy situation and your family is displaced and things are erratic, you will do whatever it takes, and Scott has really done it, and that's why he's sharing his story with everybody. So thanks again, Scott. Really do appreciate it. Great insight into everything that you shared. So with that being said, this is pretty much the end of our episode. Again, if you're a long-term fan, thank you so much for listening. And if you're new and if you're looking for additional ways to reset your own personal life, head on over to the website operationselfreset.com. And midway down the page, there's a little opt-in box for 6 high-quality PDF files to get yourself in the right mindset to reset your life. It's just an email opt-in. I'll send them to you for free. And also, too, I'm not a big email guy. I'm not going to send you 300 emails a day and tell you about all the cool things that are going on with Operation Self Reset. If there's something important, I'll share it. And if not, you can unsubscribe. It's a one-click process, so no harm, no foul. I just love to stay in contact with you guys. Also, too, if you're interested in looking at the Facebook fan page, head on over there, facebook.com/ OSR fan page. And that's it. So again, you guys rock. Everything that you want in your own personal life, you're able to achieve. The only person that's holding you back from your own personal success, and I mean success vaguely because success means something different to every single person that's listening, you are the only one that is holding yourself back. There's nobody. If you want to lose weight, if you want to enhance your career, become a better parent, chase your dreams, score those extra goals in your athletics, whatever it may be, nobody's holding you back but yourself. Get past those mental limitations. Get on the right path towards success. Keep on listening to podcasts like this and along with all the other great inspirational people out there. And the more people and the more books you read, you'll gain more and more confidence about yourself and removing those limiting beliefs to allow you to live the life that you want. Again, you guys rock. I got nothing more to say. Thank you so much for listening. We will catch you in another couple of weeks with the Operation Self Reset podcast.